there. We are back with another Red Ice radio program. This is Henrik, and another weekend just flew by. I hope you did something fun or relaxing for a change. We are keeping busy preparing for our live TV show on April 30th, Valpurgis Night. This will be the start, the inauguration of our new edition of shows to Red Ice. But this time it's not only audible, it is visual as well. So stay tuned to the website for more information about it. It's going to be our 10-year anniversary, a birthday party for Red Ice Radio, a marathon broadcast that we are also going to do as a fundraiser as well to help start the TV channel or begin with the program and then move on to other editions as we move ahead. We've invested a lot already to get it up to where we are now. You'll be able to see what's doable when you tune in, but it's really the cameras that we need help to invest in to make it look real good. And we also want to expand, of course, our coverage, preferably as soon as possible, right away, and bring more people aboard, professional people. And you can be part of building the channel, the show, and you might even want to take part in producing content for the show as well. I'm going to share more details about this during the live show itself, and you'll see what we'll be able to do. I'll tell you about my ideas and what we could do if we had volunteers as correspondents and reporters from different parts of the world. It's really cool what you can do these days. We're going to take some calls and we'll have guests with us as well. It'll be a fun, laid-back opening show and we have a lot of plans for it. So we're working hard on those right now. I've spoken about this now in the two previous show intros more at length. So I'm not going to bore you to death with the same rundown every show introduction here, but I do want to keep mentioning it for newcomers or people just dropping by the occasional show, because if you are interested in the type of topics we cover, you definitely want to see this and you might be the right person to be part of it as well. All right, so today we have a 1-hour show together with Oscar Turner from Omnify. He's been doing videos for a couple of years now. They are rich and dense in the graphics or animation production end of things. He's a talented young man and we've worked together with him on a few videos that we've done. We're going to talk about his work, his interests, his media endeavor and his goals, how he started all of this. And we're also going to go into the importance of aesthetics in what we do, how to create professional looking video in order to reach more people and help to wake them up. Hi, Oscar. Welcome to Red Ice Radio. It's good to have you here. Thank you for coming on the show with us.
Thank you for having me, Henrik.
We always like to speak with talented young people who do good work and encourage them to reach further, become better, and do more, of course. You do some fantastic videos. Animations and graphics are top-notch. We've had the ability to hire your services as well for some of our own videos and get some assistance on some of the longer projects. And you know as well as I do how long it takes to, you know, pull everything together for a video that is dense in animations and has good production value. So, you know, before we speak some more about that and your video work and what I guess we could call video activism, really, and talk about some of your inspirations, tell us a bit about how you ended up making videos and when you started Omnify.
Yeah, so I started Omnify around my junior year in order to counter a lot of the narrative that's being pushed by the mainstream media. But before that, I was in a group called Aryan Legacy at that time. The first series that I produced was Cosmotheism Trilogy by William Pierce, which kind of worked nicely with Aryan Legacy's ideology, which was national transhumanist. Things along the lines of, AIs and, enthusiastic about AIs and genetic modification and, network cybernetics in the context of eugenics and the betterment of the European people. Aryan Legacy disbanded after a while, so I decided to take those productions that I had made and transfer them to Omnify Media, my own platform. And I was previously inspired by the works of Norse Wolf and Ares, who made lot of the William Pierce and David Duke videos. So those really inspired me. I just kind of wanted to carry the torch.
Well, we spoke a bit before the recording, really. We had a test run here. And you mentioned a little bit about how your interest was piqued initially into looking into the kind of subjects that you make videos about now. Tell us a bit about that and your experience in school.
Right. So around the eighth grade or so, our reading teacher was, he gave us a unit on the Holocaust. And so, I mean, it just kind of, you know, I started to question, you know, why would Hitler hate the Jews so much? You know, why would he want to exterminate them? And I also began to explore, you know, other topics such as race, eugenics, World War II, the Jewish question, and so forth. So, you know, I'd ask, you know, why did Hitler hate the Jews so much, to my teacher? And, you know, they'd always say something along the lines of, you know, he was just envious because Jews were doing pretty well at that time. Or he was just, you know, hate-filled and crazy. So, I mean, but I really wanted to understand the other side of the story, which was never being presented. And so I turned to a friend of mine who is a self-proclaimed fascist and national socialist. And
good,
so
good you had him to go to, huh? Unlike most people.
Yeah, perhaps, I mean, yeah, perhaps that's part of why... you know, there's so many oblivious goyim out there, but
yeah, because I mean that does kind of set you apart in terms of the fact that you actually pursued the question and decided to look at the other side. Most people are just they run in the opposite direction out of fear, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was watching the new James Bond film Spectre a few nights ago, and there's this scene where, you know, Bond's strapped to a chair, and there's this like caricature of a German who's about to, you know, kill him. But I mean, I was wondering, like, at what point, you know, do people just kind of say, all right, you know, we get it, you know, Nazism's bad, but, you know, how come Hollywood just has to, you know, fixate on this over the course of a half a century? Yeah, so I mean, it really piqued my curiosity. And so I began, you know, I began looking into revisionism. I began looking into the works of William Pierce, listening to American Dissident Voices. But I think it really kind of peaked when I saw what really started World War II, which was a Pierce video made by Norse Wolf, and it kind of goes into, you know, what Jews were doing, in their involvement in communism, you know, how they founded the ideology of it, and their resentment of the Gentile Europeans and so forth.
Yeah, God's blessed the internet, huh? That, you know, that you had the ability to find that material. I remember when I grew up in Sweden, and I always had a kind of a similar curiosity, really, in terms of looking at the opposite side and, you know, why were things like this and that, but I didn't have the internet to access. So that's just a tremendous and amazing help, you know? So that's something, I guess, aided in your search initially, right? to get on the right page and find all these videos, find all the material. It's just amazing what we can access these days.
Yeah. I mean, I started out with the Pierce videos, but eventually I ran out. I mean, I think this was around 2012 or so. Mm-hmm, so I eventually ran out of the videos to watch. So, I mean, I wasn't really much of a bookworm when I was younger. But, I mean, from there, I kind of, you know, just dived straight in, you know, Rockwell, Pierce. My Awakening by David Duke was really eye-opening, as well as Jewish supremacism. So, yeah, I mean, I started to dive. I mean, it was just... it was an incredibly eye-opening, it was incredible to just find all this material and to just learn that your entire life, you've just been lied to about virtually everything.
Yeah, and imagine those who are like 50 or 60 or 70 years old learning some of this stuff. Jeez, you know, talk about being robbed of of a stance politically and history, right? So it's good that you caught it early.
Yeah, it's a curse and a blessing at the same time.
Right, right. So did you, I mean, I don't know how personally you want to get, but did I don't know if you were in any way vocal with your friends about this, and if this kind of set you you know, if you lost friends because of this, or did you kind of keep it mostly to yourself?
I went to an art school at the time, which was, it was kind of like social justice warriors were everywhere before that was even a thing.
Right.
But yeah, so they were very big on, you know, promoting diversity and LGBT and all these other things. I would talk about these things pretty openly with my friends. And eventually word got around. So, and the principal found out. So, I eventually had to leave.
Oh yeah. Oh boy. Don't doubt it. So when did you start looking at video productions and how did that end up?
So I was in Aryan Legacy at that time, and a contact of mine, who was also into, you know, the ideology of national transhumanism. He commissioned me to edit. He's like, he saw some of my work that I made for the channel, some of the music and videos that I was getting out. And from there, he commissioned me to make a Cosmotheism trilogy. And, you know, I started making some more Pierce videos going back to the American Dissident Voices. As well as other figures such as Chimeros and Pierce, and the European Giant, I also wrote and narrated.
Oh, so you'd done some video work obviously before that point already. Did you did you learn this by yourself? Did you study any of the programs you use today?
Yeah, it was all self-taught. I just went on YouTube and looked up After Effects tutorials. And while I was in Aryan Legacy, I had some experience modeling in Blender 3D. So I modeled some stuff when it's needed. But guys, if you really want to trigger, you know, Abrams and all these people in Hollywood, just go to videocopilot.net and there's tons of material.
Yeah. Yeah, I caught that a few years ago as well. I don't know how many, three years ago, I think. Started getting into some of that, and it's just some amazing things you can do these days. You don't really have to learn or know 3D, although obviously it helps. I think you're getting into that a little bit more now as well. But it's truly extraordinary what level of production you can do fairly quickly these days. It's awesome. These tools are great.
Yeah, I learned After Effects. I mean, I had known a little bit of After Effects within, like, you know, 2 weeks. I was able to create a Cosmotheism trilogy.
I haven't seen that one. I gotta take a look then. Tell us a bit about the videos that you've done so far, what you have kind of in your lineup, and where people can go to look at the videos.
So my site is www.omnify.tv for my video work and a gallery of some Photoshops. But my stuff's on YouTube. For Omnify, the goal was, I kind of wanted to create something, omnipotent to be, these ideas are, you know, they have virulent potential. So I wanted something omnipotent, hence the Omni. And then, you know, to kind of prove that the alternative media on our side is a force to be reckoned with and with the highest possible quality, so hence the phi, since it's the Greek symbol for the golden ratio.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But, I had learned some of these skills, so I kind of wanted to just go back and, you know, go through Pierce, go through Rockwell, and really, and Chimeros, and start giving people, sometimes when you can go through comment sections and just like shitpost on and make snarky comments on the National Review or something, or get in, you know, arguments on Twitter, but that's all great. But sometimes you just need something like here's a video, watch it and really be able to visualize a lot of your arguments. So I wanted to take the work of Pierce and Rockwell and so on and you know, give it a nice modern touch and make it visualized.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's incredibly important in these times to work with aesthetics, and of course, usually the production value has not been that great when it comes to people really in any alternative field within you know, the alternative media, whatever topic you've been into. But things have really changed, and you know, you've really upped the ante for giving a really visual appealing look to many of these. You know, many of the videos, many of the you know, researchers and scholars and speakers and everything else that are out there already. How important do you think it is with production value and kind of visually make it appealing to people who might not be on that page already?
Yeah, I mean, before I was making videos, I had actually wanted to you know, get a pro white video game together. That's why I got into, you know, Blender 3D and things like that. But that became very overwhelming very quickly. But part of the motivation for that was, you know, some of the games coming out that were with our, you know, like Zog's Nightmare or Ethnic Cleansing or something, you know, there'd be, I would see...
What, tell us about that. I have no idea. I haven't been into the video game scene in years. What is that?
So, I mean, these were put out by, I don't know, the National Alliance and like the NSM, and like people just, I mean, they were kind of like, they were subpar, so people wouldn't really take them seriously. I decided I'd, you know, take up game design and things like that, and it would be cool to have, you know, some pro-light gaming. But then, I mean, I just ended up, you know, working more with the video and After Effects and stuff like that, because, I mean, you can get something out that's very powerful so much quicker.
Right. That is true. Yeah, video games. I've heard there are some that are, you know, that have, there are some good designers and whatnot out there, but it's difficult to, of course, get in and get your message through. And the question is if it would reach as many people as well. I think videos is a more powerful tool overall, you know. But tell us a bit more about, you know, art and artistic expression and how important that, how you think that is an important component of you know, getting the word out.
Right. I mean, I think it's really critical, because that's how the left was able to dominate. I mean, that's how they dominate our society today. Is, you know, back in the 60s, they were able to build up the counterculture. They were able to have, you know, the sex, drugs, rock and roll, the hot chicks, the rockin' bands and everything, the music, the style to it. And I think especially within the past 2 years, I mean, things are just finally starting to really come together in terms of, you know, our message, people being more outspoken about these things and articulate. I think our product, I mean, like your work and the works of, you know, all of us is really starting to build up. But yeah, I mean, like art's very important, because I mean, that's the whole reason why the Jews started buying up media in the first half of the 20th century. And dominate Hollywood was so that they would be able to inculcate our people with whatever they wanted. So multiculturalism and, you know, all the degeneracy we see around us is because they were able to dominate the media. So all we have to do is take the technology in our hands, and we'll be able to reverse it.
Yeah, it's a really good point. You know, I think we've done quite a bit already, specifically with podcasting, of course. That's really getting the word out, radio shows, etc. But I'm really, you know, looking into video as the next step in all of this. And this is obviously why we're planning to do the live show now coming up here at the end of April. And I think that's going to be a big, you know, a big step in the right direction. It's not going to be obviously 100% of what we want it to be out the gates. This is going to take time to build up. Just in the way that Hollywood took time, really. I mean, they started very amateurishly, really, and with these like Nickelodeon peep shows and stuff like that, and they, you know, when they stole the technology from Edison, pretty much. But what is your approach and strategy when it comes to wiggle out of this? You know, I think about this all the time in terms of, you know, what we need to do to get the word out there, to create a new media, and to make it palatable and applicable, and also to reach out people. Is this something you think about a lot too? Of like, how do we compete with not only news media, but also entertainment media?
Yeah, at some point, things are definitely going to go to a new level. I mean, people can, I mean, through social media now, I mean, like with Open Gates, for instance, went viral. I mean, it has like, I don't know, 8 to 10 million views at this point.
Remarkable.
I mean,
yeah.
It really is. I mean, that was definitely a small victory for us. So there's that. I mean, yeah, strategy is important. I'm actually reading The 48 Laws of Power currently by Robert Greene. And it's definitely important to read things like that in order to, you know, brainstorm and strategy and things like that. I listened to a part of the podcast you did recently about developing a merchant class.
Right. Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting. I mean, the whole part of the reason why we're having difficulty is because, you know, white people are very individualistic, and we're dealing with other groups who have a collectivist mindset. So, I mean, I think mainly our main goal at this point should be education and that sort of thing. And then there could be this resurgence of a collectivist white European mindset, and then we can take it from there.
Yeah, I mean, art on the right, even economy, business orientation on the right, movies on the right. I mean, I think we're at a stage where we have to do these things ourselves and to build them up. And I think also, in at least in terms of news and entertainment, of course, video media, we definitely have the ability to do things fairly, you know, fairly non-expensive, basically. There are ways that you can do things now, but it's still a matter of time. I mean, how much time do you spend on your average video? Because that's really where the bottleneck is, I feel. We can have ideas, we can have, you know, all these great things of what we want to do, but at the end of the day, it takes massive amount of hours of just making it look the way it look, right?
Yeah, I mean, on average, you know, something I'll work on takes about, you know, 2 weeks or so to get out.
And those are, so for people who don't know, they are on average, what, 5 to 10 minutes or something, right?
Yeah. I mean, lately I've been, I was kind of inspired by, I'm not sure how you pronounce it. It's some Russian channel, OKM.net or something like that. But they had videos like called, like Russian aggressor, Russian occupant. And they're only like 3 minutes long, but like the production quality of them is just, insane. So, I mean, the past, handful of videos have been more, they've been more short, but polished. But yeah, I mean, it depends. But yeah, some videos I've made are 20 minutes. Some are 3 minutes. Some are 10 minutes. But I mean, yeah, depending on how long it is, and the quality, usually the average is about like 2 weeks or so to get something out there.
What other inspirations do you have? There's something I wanted to ask you about, and I know you sent me one of those videos too. Of the Russian guy, some really cool stuff there, and it seems to be fairly, you know, fairly simple. Again, it takes time, but he kind of stitched together a number of different things. He was using some, you know, pre-made templates from Video Hive and a couple of other things. But at the end, it looked really, really seamless. You know, beautiful.
Yeah, I actually used the same template that the guy did for Russian occupant. I mean, in fact, like on paper, the European giant was actually a Euro occupant for a time before I got it out there.
Right, right. Any other inspirations that you've been looking at in terms of your your work or how to up the production value?
Yeah, so I like that the Russian channel. I like Andrew Kramer. Grayscale Gorilla is a Cinema 4D site that I really like. And then I really did I already mention Andrew Kramer?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's the video co-pilot. He does some of the plugins and whatnot to After Effects.
Yeah, all his plugins are really useful. And I also really like on the Blender side of things, I also really like Andrew Price and Gleb Alexandrov. So in their tutorials, I actually bought the Architecture Academy by Andrew Price. But I mean, if you want to take it a step further with those guys, they go into photorealism and that type of thing, and how a camera works and materials and lighting. So the principles that those guys teach will help your work get to the next level.
Yeah, indeed. Do you work a lot with footage, or do you kind of build most of the environments kind of internally in the computer with pre-made images and stuff like this?
It kind of depends. I made a video for This Is Europa that's released, What Will Mass Immigration Lead To? And most of it was, just footage that I looked up on Vimeo, and then some other scenes with maps and, you know, particles and the migration thing. Those were a bit more from scratch. Most of the stuff on my channel lately has been more building the environment. But, sometimes you don't really want to spend... You want to kind of prioritize like what exactly you want to capture. So if, some footage, some footage captures what you want to say, that's fine. But if you really want to emphasize and sell something, sometimes you want to build it from scratch and make it look as professional as possible.
And that's when you really start taking time as well. You know, when you want maybe even the video footage itself, try to capture that and whatnot. But it's doable. It's remarkable what you can do. If you know how to light, even just using a DSLR camera these days, you can make it look really good, have an okay lens and you're set to go in terms of aesthetics, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So tell us a bit about more of your kind of, what you're seeking to achieve, right? Of some of your goals of where you want this to go and how you want it to impact people.
Eventually, I'd like to take things, to where it could be, perhaps a company just 24/7, just dishing out alternative media. I'd like to make documentaries. Right now I'm also reading Who We Are by William Pierce, which I find kind of fascinating. I kind of noticed that with, Nova or, National Geographic or things like that. They kind of spark that curiosity, that Faustian curiosity that a lot of, people might have in, science and, history, and seeking knowledge. But then they're able to kind of, twist that into their, multiculturalist mode.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what I would like, Cosmos, with Neil deGrasse Tyson is just a perfect example of that. But I would love to have, a series that, go into kind of similar things, but they would be more leaning towards European achievements and nationalism.
Yeah, I agree with that, and actually this is something I've been thinking about too for the plans we have for the future of Red Ice when it comes to us going more into video, both live, but also, pre-produced material, that we really need a media, I feel, that is not always constantly explicit on the political issue or even the stance. But it's like, I would love to enjoy a travel program that was like going to, European towns or ancient places in Europe or something, that just spared you from the cultural Marxist poison that they always pour in either at the end or right or even, you know, throughout. That, you know, I think the success would be to have something which you know, appeal to our people, but it doesn't have to constantly be political, if you know what I'm saying. It's like there's a number of ways you can do it. Exactly. There's a number of ways you can do it.
I mean, yeah, that'd be great. Even with some of my motivationals that I get out there, you know, just quick Photoshops that I like to get in between videos, you know, those are more identitarian leaning, I would say. I mean, they kind of just have more of a, you know, simple, subtle message that, I mean, it is racial, but it's not exactly, you know, Sieg Heil in your face. So, right. Yeah, I mean, it's important to have, you know, explicit and implicit things in terms of media.
So is this, in your view, kind of the best level of well, there's many, of course, but I'm obviously you have a preference for it, right? Is this the best level of activism in your view in terms of spreading the message and educating people? And is this the way to go?
I would definitely, yeah, I'd say alternative media would be a great investment because, I mean, that's really where, you know, a lot of my friends, you know, I'll see them like flipping their phones, you know, on like the hottest video or something. And a lot of the, you know, like Vines, for instance, are, you know, really popular and ADD inducing. But we're, you know, yeah, like it's like a new shot every 6 seconds or something. So really we need, you know, something really energetic and fast paced because, I almost kind of hate to say this in a way. It makes me cringe, but you know, whether we like it or not, it's you know, my generation that's going to determine you know, the fate of our people. So we really need to, you know, aim at you know, millennials who are going to, you know, fight for the reconquest of Europe. And you know, currently the best medium is online with the internet. And so yeah, I think it is, you know, the best in terms of, you know, how fast you can, you know, share and reach people. But there's, I mean, we can also do this on, you know, all sorts of levels. We also need to challenge the academic institutions that are indoctrinating, you know, college kids into thinking that there's 500 genders and that they should pay for the alleged sins of their ancestors and they have white privilege. And, you know, we need to, you know, have our own businesses, our own communities, you know, have, you know, vibrant families, and white children, and, you know, really just do everything we can, to secure a future. I mean, if you have a skill, just, you know, continue to refine it and, you know, do everything you can for the cause.
Exactly. Right. And there are obviously multiple fronts that we need to fight on. And this is only one, but I do believe, that it's one of the more powerful ones. Now you mentioned the kind of the ADD level of the media these days, the pace, the epileptic pace in some cases. Now, do you think we need to kind of keep up with that, you know, where the level that, well, it's not only Hollywood, but there's other other outlets these days that produces this, that attracts people. Do you think we need to try to keep up with that, or do we need to set a different pace and take things in a different direction? I struggle with that sometimes in terms of, you know, kind of on the same part where people say, well, you have to dumb down the message, right, to kind of appeal to people or make it come through, whatever. But at the same time, I feel, no, we need to have people step up actually to the message. We don't need to dumb it down. On the other hand, I do see the need for making it appealing to the masses so that we can actually get the numbers that we need. But what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, I mean, does this kind of relate in a sense to, you know, there kind of seems to be, you know, two emerging factions of our movement. I mean, there's, you know, the more white nationalist leading people who, you know, look into, you know, world or national socialists, you know, who, you know, are into World War II and revisionism and things like that. And then there's the more identitarian leaning people who are saying, you know, this is ours. This is our homeland, and you know, all the other people need to go. So, I mean, in terms of, you know, maybe dumbing down or mainstreaming the message, I think there's, you know, people who are, you know, making our ideas a lot more appealing. And then there's going to be, you know, the leaders and the vanguard who are going to be more into, you know, tackling on everything in depth. You know, they like to read about, you know, philosophy and history and politics, and they really like to, you know, have a full, well-rounded understanding. But, I mean, revolutions are never fought by, you know, 80% of the population or something. You know, it's always a very small and powerful 5% who are idealistic and highly energetic and motivated.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, you're right. Tell us a bit about the youth's role in where this is going, and in terms of the fight, the struggle that we're involved in right now. How do we attract young people? When I, you know, when I look at some of the Bernie rallies, there's a lot of young people there. And it seems to be an extreme polarization. There's also a lot of young people for Trump, of course. But how do you think we attract the youth?
I mean, I guess a little bit of background to this is, you know, in the 60s, that's when, you know, the first half of the 20th century was the white man's century, in essence. But then things started to really change, and we kind of went from being this superpower to being this complacent, weak, and pathologically altruistic civilization. So, you know, the so-called greatest generation who came home following World War II gave birth to the baby boomers. And then, you know, from there, there was the counterculture and the so-called Civil Rights Act. And then now their kids, us, have to deal with the ramifications of all their ways.
Yep.
And so, I mean, it's millennials. I mean, it's us who really have to deal with, you know, the anti-white institutions and telling us that we can't have an identity and we should hate ourselves, while all the other groups have that same fundamental right. So, I mean, it's really only a matter of time before enough whites, you know, are just fed up and start joining the game of identity politics. And in the past year, with, you know, social justice warriors and Black Lives Matter, it only gives more credibility to our ideas.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, really, the anti-feminist scene, those who are speaking down on SJWs and everything else, that's really exploded in the last year, year and a half or so. And then I think it's just a matter of course before this, you know, goes into new territory, basically, in terms of the fact that they dare to look at white identity and why it is that we are not allowed to organize as a group like everyone else does, etc. But this is really the new counterculture in a way, isn't it? I mean, the counterculture of the 60s has been established as the mainstream, as the establishment now. And I think that we can really harness. Usually I don't like the underdog kind of concept. It seems to have been something, when you look at that video called An Empire of Their Own, explaining, you know, Hollywoodism and how the Jewish founders of Hollywood kind of inserted this into the American experience, if you will. I don't know if you've seen it. It's just it's really fascinating.
Was there a clip of that? And there was a video that you put out on Hollywood. I think I saw a clip of that.
Exactly. It's right in the beginning there. They kind of talk about that a little. But in that documentary, they kind of explain how this idea of the underdog was their concept, right? It was a Jewish mentality. It was about being an outsider and then succeeding against the establishment kind of thing. Whereas the European way have been the way of the hero, right? It's he's not an underdog by default. He's a king and he goes out and conquers. He defeats the dragon. There isn't any kind of underdog position on that. But nonetheless, people seem to, you know, for better or for worse, they seem to identify with the underdog concept right now. So we might as well work with that as opposed to at least immediately against it. So I think if we can position our point of view as the underdog, or even as the outsider, the rebel, the new counterculture, I think that that actually really might appeal to people. What do you think?
I think that's interesting. I mean, yeah, the whole, you know, like Jonathan Stewart saying, you know, look at this dumb white Republican from wherever, that whole narrative is kind of fading away. You know, you can only tell a joke so many times. And now people are, I mean, you know, there's still people like, you know, Sargon of Akkad, for instance, or, you know, Gavin McInnes or Paul Joseph Watson, who, mm-hmm. you know, they might not be, you know, full red pill. They're probably more, you know, purple, but nonetheless, it's still encouraging that, you know, people are just so fed up with the way, you know, society is going, you know, with just the perpetual anti-white rhetoric coming out of the media and the establishment. And so, you know, I think people who are along, you know, those lines that are, you know, against social justice warriors and everything like that, you know, they would be great recruits.
You know, it's a good point, Oscar, because I've been annoyed with these people to a large extent on a personal level. But that doesn't mean I can't appreciate what they do. I think that this is the case for many people, that we don't actually need them, if you will, to go the full extent and the full path, because they can actually work to our advantage whether they know it or not, because these people are a bridge. They do funnel, I think, people from one end of the spectrum to another, right? When people start asking the questions of like, okay, but, you know, why did this happen? Like, who, you know, who promoted feminism like this? What, you know, what lies behind this? There are people and research and material that are ready to kind of, you know, capture people when they arrive on the other side of that bridge, if you know what I mean. So I think that they're serving a good function, and I think we shouldn't spend, you know, too much of our energy just trying to criticize them to make them go all the way, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And then, you know, some people who like what they're saying might be sympathetic to what we're saying. And that's really all that matters. I mean, if you're having, you know, conversations with people about these issues and you plant a seed, I mean, and, you know, they keep an open mind, that's all you can really ask for. Because I think our main goal at this moment is to, you know, challenge the narrative and what's being pushed out.
Yep, that's right. And then, of course, at the same time, we got to watch ourselves so that there aren't people that position themselves to speak, you know, well, for us, I say us within quotation marks, but, or we within quotation marks, it isn't, you know, really that organized, as some people seem to think. There was actually a couple of interesting articles recently that came out specifically on the alt-right from National Review and The Federalist and a couple of other places. And this came after the Breitbart, the Milo guy, wrote on the alt-right. And it was kind of quite interesting to see. I think there's no such thing as bad publicity, but at the same time, there's almost kind of an idea that, you know, Milo, to a certain extent, was like positioning himself as someone as speaking for the alt-right, which is, of course, very, very detrimental, I'd say. But, you know, at least they're writing about it. At least it's getting out there, and there isn't such a thing as bad publicity. But we got to watch out. That's my point. And we got to make sure that some of these other people don't ending up becoming spokespersons or trying to take it off or derail it or taking off this into a different direction. Don't know if you have any thoughts on that, Oscar.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing with Milo is kind of interesting. I mean, he did this interview with, I think it was the Rubin Report or something. But, I mean, he did this, I've seen him, like, you know, mention the alt-right, and he kind of, you know, almost dismisses it in a sense. You know, he's just like, oh, well, you know, it isn't really, you know, anti-Semitism. It's just, you know, they have this meme with, you know, this with the Jew rubbing his hands and everything, and they just know how to, you know, get off on people. So, I mean, perhaps in a way that is that could have like the effect of people not taking us seriously. Yeah, he is, you know, kind of flamboyantly homosexual and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I wouldn't exactly say he's a great role model to be advocating us. But
I learned it was Jewish too just a couple of days ago. Nick Griffin spoke about that. I had no idea actually. So
yeah, I listened to a Joe Rogan podcast he did, which was he mentioned he was half Jewish. He has like some great talking points. You know, he's hilarious, but you definitely gotta. It is kind of disappointing that he has relations with black guys and you know all that. I mean, I kind of find that interesting. Like, how do you kind of find yourself in? You know, I kind of imagine a conservative or somebody on the right being, very traditional and family oriented, but here he is, saying that, he's with black guys and snorting coke. I mean, it's kind of interesting, but,
God, I think he's there to not only him, but many others. I mentioned this many times now, but everywhere from the rebel with Ezra Levant in Canada to, Ben Shapiro with his stereotypical badgers. I think they're there to ride the wave of the discontent and also the success, if you will, of the alt-right. Now that's managed to kind of peer through. Whether or not people take it seriously, it's obviously that they're worried enough so that they have to write about it and try to put it down, and that's happening for a reason.
So I think that, the thing with, Milo and Ben Shapiro, their outlook on multiculturalism, for instance. So a lot of, 90, so Hollywood is, overwhelmingly Jewish, 95% or so, according to the LA Times. Hollywood, the mainstream media is, very big on, saying white people are evil and, promoting, race mixing and all these types of things. And they want to undermine the white identity. But then on the flip side, I'm sure there's, other Jews who understand that, when America is no longer a majority white country, it might be harder for them to, have, Christian supporters, giving money to Israel, and supporting the Jews. So it's a lot easier to manipulate, white Christians into, their Holocaust narrative and, the Jews are God's chosen people and so forth than it is for millions of, Mexicans coming across the border and, even Muslims coming into the country who, make the National Socialists look like kindergarten when it comes to anti-Jewish attitudes. So, Ben Shapiro and Milo aren't exactly, big on white privilege being pushed, but so they would probably be a lot happier in a society that's majority white and supports them and that's on the right.
I fear that their goal is the destruction of the West, and when they're done with that, they can return to Israel, and they'll have all the money in the world. It's just bathed in all the support they're getting from, they have gotten from America and Germany at the end. But you might be right. I mean, there might be factions within it, of course, that sees that to the detriment. It doesn't mean that there aren't, divisions internally in terms of what direction they should go and need to go. But yeah, interesting point. I wanted to ask you briefly about, some of the things that has to do with transhumanism as well, and some of your thoughts on that. It's a huge topic, but I used to talk about it a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We were quite a bit into it. I did it more from a perspective of like, oh shit, like where the hell is this going to go? Who's going to be in control of this technology? Basically the aspect that whoever controls it will be dominating, of course. And so later I came to the understanding that, if the elites do it, or that I understood right away, of course. But if we don't take control of it, then the elites will take control of it and they will basically subjugate us accordingly. But where do you see that fitting into the whole picture? Are you still kind of interested in that subject? And where do you think that will go in terms of both, you know, modifying genetics, but we're talking about computer brain, you know, interfaces, brain implants, the whole idea of cyborgs or, you know, exoskeletons, machinery and stuff like that. Is that something that you take stock in, and the fact that this could be something that could work to our advantage in the future if and when we are at a position where we are a minority and where we might even be hostilely treated openly by every other group?
And that's an excellent question. I still have interest in transhumanism, of course, although I don't really promote it as much in my work because, when I was in, you know, Aryan Legacy, I found that when I would bring it up with, nationalists, there would be, some who are, interested in it, some people who maybe don't understand it, or, people who, are against it. And so, at some point, I kind of decided that I don't really want to, just go in circles with it, and to just, put out, pro-white media generally, because, there's some of us who are going to be, a little bit more traditional and enjoy the little things. And then there's going to be some of our people that are more of, a Tesla type or a Werner Braun who want to, explore space and, go to the stars. I think what's interesting about transhumanism is that, fundamentally they have, I think they're, essentially into eugenics. They, think it's better. It's kind of, they have an ideal of, where to push humanity, and it's very forward thinking. I like that. And, they're very smart people. It's a very white thing, which I think, I'd imagine that would be like a white nationalist dream, is just like, networking with all these intelligent and resourceful whites. But so I think, with Oculus Rift and virtual reality emerging, it would definitely be cool to have, some transhumanists and very tech savvy people into computer science on our side.
Yeah, I've been concerned with the fact that how it will transform people that adopt the technology. There's many, many problems health-wise with having things like implants or even meddling with genetics without thinking, there's going to be consequences to us, to it. But on the other hand, I had a friend that I met recently that tried to raise the concern that, if China, for example, takes charge of this technology, they will use it to their advantage to win, right? to do what they need to do to gain, mastery over themselves and become the rulership and directors of this planet. And my friend expressed the need for basically those who developed primarily the technology to take responsibility of guiding that, right? That his analogy was you don't let the kids play with the matches kind of thing, which I thought was an interesting point. And for that reason alone, we must have to face the idea that if we develop the technology, we must take control of it and make sure that it doesn't end up in hands of those people who would use it very, very unwisely, to put it lightly.
Yeah, I would definitely, the scenario that you mentioned earlier where, say if we are in the minority, and we, need to take some measures in order to defend ourselves. It would definitely be critical that we have the means to do so. I guess in terms, sometimes people might worry about, a white genocide, the face of white extinction. But I think so long as there's, whites around, even like, perhaps 100,000, there's, we just have to, really work together and use our genius to our own benefit.
Yeah, indeed. Just speaking to that for a moment, what would you say to the divisions among our ranks and the focusing on the far less smaller disagreements and petty differences as opposed to what we have in common. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I've been noticing a lot of it. I mean, I try to really just, stay out of those as much as possible because, I mean, the amount of time that you spend, I mean, again, this is the whole problem is, white people have this tendency to be so individualistic. Whereas, I mean, it's like, somebody might have a take on something that varies. But I mean, really, we all agree on like 95% of the critical thing. I mean, we know that there's this need for us to have this identity and racial consciousness. And it's just so important. I mean, all these other groups, I mean, they might have, personal squabbles, but at the end of the day, they understand what's best for the race. So, I mean, yeah, we can have disagreements on things, but it really is critical that we put those aside for the greater good. And there's these migrants coming in and they're raping and attacking our people. And meanwhile, somebody might be getting in a fight with so-and-so when that time and energy could have been used towards something productive. So,
yeah, it's extraordinary, isn't it? I agree with you. And those who obviously don't prioritize cooperation and trying to cooperate to solve our issues together, they don't have our best interests at heart. And that's just a fact. They nitpick and they fight. And yeah, they can, of course, do whatever they do. But everyone should be wise to realize what their true priority actually is. So be aware of that, ladies and gentlemen. Now, do you have any tips like for people who would start wanting to produce something themselves, right? I mean, obviously, to a certain extent, the more the merrier, the more we can, put out, the more, videos we can produce, etc., the better it is. And we might have people out there listening who are interested in it. They might want to either try it out for themselves or kind of step things up to the next level and really become a producer in the way that you are. What tips would you have for them?
I would say, just start out with After Effects and go to Video Copilot. Those have some really good tutorials. I believe there's a guy on YouTube called Tech Rot who has a really good series on how to get started. And from there, there's a lot of books on there for, photography, cinematography, that type of thing, composition. If you really want to push your work to the next level.
All right. Thank you for that. Now, let's see if there's anything else we should cover here, Oscar, before we start wrapping up. Obviously, we want to hear more about your website, what you have planned coming up next. If there's any other, channels or social networks or whatever you want to give out, Twitter or whatever, please go ahead and give those out. But what else would you like to leave us with and some of the, anything to our audience, basically?
I would just say, I'm really encouraged by, all the support in the past year or so that I've had Omnify up. And it's just really exciting to see how things are going. I remember, getting in on this in, 2012. All we had was, Stormfront and I guess a few other platforms, but now we even have things like National Action where people with our ideals are, hitting the streets and, confronting the communists head on, which is always encouraging. Stay strong and keep up the good fight. Your people need you.
You give us the website again, Oscar, and if there's any other way that either people can help you and if they can reach you on any of the, Facebook or Twitter or anything like that.
My website is www.omnify.tv, and you can find my work on a Facebook page, Twitter, and I have a Tumblr as well, and on YouTube.
By the way, what's your next video coming up? Anything you want to tell us about?
I have a few ideas kind of floating around. There's this chapter in Wilmot Robertson's The Dispossessed Majority. On art and how that's been a huge decline. A lot of the other stuff in his book was a bit more political, but this one I could really relate to because it was about culture. And then there's another one, another script that I'm working on that's original, which kind of, it kind of debunks white guilt.
All right. Very good. Well, thank you, Oscar. I really appreciate your time today. It was great having you on. Let's do it again. And please keep up the good work.
Sure thing. Thanks.
That's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening. We are going to be back on Wednesday with a 314. We are working hard on the upcoming live TV show. A lot of things that have to be worked out. And we're also updating the website in the background of everything. A significant facelift. And behind the hood, well, everything is being gutted and replaced. It's basically a brand new Lamborghini. Well built. And it's going to be great. It is a much needed update and is going to be a much better experience for you as a listener, viewer, and reader. And then we'll move on to the members' website and do that next because it also needs an update. All right, well, I'll better switch over to some of the other work that we have to do here. We have a lot of irons in the fire right now, but we'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much for your support. And if you're not yet a member and want to get access to our 10 years of shows and the full archives, Red Ice Members.com is the website. It helps us to do what we're doing now with the radio show and, of course, the upcoming live TV show. So thank you so much for helping and assisting us to build our own media since the others have failed. Not that we're the only ones doing this, although I would say we have a unique way of doing it. But as they say, if you want to have something done right, you need to do it yourself. And that's what we're doing. We're trying to do it the right way and do everything we can to fight, to wake people up, to inspire people, to help them see how dire the situation is, but also to show them that this is far from over. We also want to help to build their strength and courage so that they can take their own side and stand with their own. And we also need to gather the numbers. And when we have the right manpower to command this ship to go in the right direction. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening today. It's always a pleasure to have you with us. Have a great rest of your day or evening, wherever you are, and we will talk to you soon. We'll see you soon. Take care.